Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Richard Sternberg, a biologist with the Discovery Institute. Dr. Sternberg will be discussing evidence that refutes the myth that the human genome is full of junk DNA. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Dr. Sternberg.
Here's another point for the ladies. You have two X chromosomes, but only one of those X chromosomes is in an active state. The other X chromosome is inactivated during early development. And this is true for mammals in general, at least for placental mammals. I think marsupials have something similar to it, but here's the point again. When you look at a human chromosome, X chromosome, you look at a mouse X chromosome, you look at a chimpanzee or gorilla, et cetera, you look at the X chromosomes, what you find is, again, you've got these species-specific DNA sequences. They're repeated, miles and miles and miles of them. And it turns out that these are the sequences, the elements that are being used to decide which of the X chromosomes is going to be inactivated and how that inactivation process is going to take place. And it takes place, again, in a hierarchical fashion, where initially you get these folders, they're blocked off, then they're compressed, and they're compressed until finally the inactive X chromosome, or at least part of it, is this dense body. You can see it in any woman's or girl's cells. It's called the bar body. It's how you know, for example, if you were given a random piece of tissue and you're a scientist and you say, well, you know, we don't know, is this from a man or a woman? You can instantly tell by looking at the cytology of the cells, by looking at the inactivated X chromosome. My point is that whole process takes place, again, because of these species-specific elements, these human-specific elements. Of course, chimps are doing that their thing, but again, they're doing it in a different way than we are. And here's another example. I'll just skip through this. There's another family, huge family. These are called short interspersed nuclear elements. Again, forget about the name, but they tend to be small. Most of your DNA, the largest proportion consists of them. And what you find is you've got all these families of them that are unique to you and that are absent in the chimpanzee. Hundreds of them. Now, I would suspect thousands of are different. And they're distributed in a non-random pattern. Well, again, well, so what? Another, you know, triviality. Well, they are, again, interspersed in your genes. And what's interesting is that they are loaded with all kinds of little toggle switches, so to speak, that are responsive to things like estrogen. They're responsive to thyroid hormones. They are responsive to a number of things, calcium response. So when your cells, when you have, for example, you need to shift your metabolism very quickly at the organ level and then at the tissue level and then at the cell level, many of these switches that are being flipped, even as we speak, even as you're listening to me, you have changes going on physiologically, could be going to sleep. That's a physiological change. But some of these switches that are being flipped on and flipped off are due to these human-specific elements. And so again, why are we not chimps or dolphins or aardvarks or elephants? It's because our DNA is wired differently. And so anyway, and again, you know, I've said, yes, we're very similar in terms of sequences, but on the other hand, there are these striking differences. If you look at, here's a very interesting pattern. And I don't know if this name rings a bell because one of the discoverers of this pattern is a man named Francis Collins. All right. This is from a 2004 paper. I was working at the NIH at the time. He was over the Human Genome Research Institute. I was at the National Center for Biotechnology Information at what's called GenBank, which is a DNA repository. And Francis Collins and others have made the argument that when you look at these sequences, they are just randomly distributed, therefore they're junk. It's one of the main arguments for common descent, but it's also one of the main arguments for Darwinism. Is anyone not familiar with this argument? Or you've heard some form of it, I am very sure. Well, here's the pattern. I've written some on this because it's very intriguing. If you look at the top line, what you've got there is you've got the mouse and the rat. What you've got, mouse is in green, the rat's in red. The sequences that are being aligned are what? They are the junk DNA regions of chromosomes. Now, the thing is, when you look at the rat sequences, the rat junk DNA regions, they are rat-specific. They're not present in the mouse genome. When you look at the mouse sequences, they're mouse-specific. They don't exist in the rat genome. When you align them up, you line up the chromosomes, what do you see? It's the same linear pattern. Now, around the time this came out, there was a story in parallel to it. It was a physicist who had published a number of papers, and I do have a point here. And what they noticed was that he would come up with his various graphs in these various groundbreaking papers, and you could superimpose one graph on the other. Different experiments, supposedly different variables. You would expect some random noise eventually to occur. Someone would bang the measurement instrument, and you'd get a little blip or something. But no, they were identical. And they said, wait a second, we have a problem. And it turned out what he was basically doing was, it was plagiarism. He was plagiarizing himself, if you will, but he was using the same data over and over again, just reassigning the indices. When I looked at this, I thought, if someone handed me this graph and that graph, and I didn't know better, I would say it was as if someone had said, well, you know what I'm going to do here? I'm just going to redraw ever so slightly my pre-existing curve from pick mouse or rat, and I'm going to call it the other. The fact is, when you compare mouse and rat, what you find, and we're just looking at the top, is that where those sequences are distributed, the so-called junk sequences, they're almost in one-to-one correspondence. They're completely different at the sequence level. They're species-specific, I repeat. But where they're positioned along the chromosome, think like a barcode, they're almost wholly identical. There's another interesting pattern, and here it's the bottom graph. When you look at different families of these sequences, and this pertains to you, this I could be speaking about your DNA, what we find is that where you get one of these pieces of so-called junk, you won't find another type. So, for example, one of the families, like the signs, it's a family that makes about 30% of our DNA, it does not like to coexist with another family called lines. So where one peaks along a DNA sequence, the other drops off, and vice versa. It's a distinctly non-random pattern. And ladies and gentlemen, we've known about this. I knew about this circa 1984, 1986, 1988. But if you were to pick up your average reasons why you should be a theistic evolutionist and be happy on Sunday, you'll have saying, oh no, we just look at it, it's all gibberish. No one can make any heads or tails of what this is. Nonsense. Nonsense. I'm sorry if I'm being so vigorous about it, but it gets under my skin. Now, you say, okay, well, mouse and rats are very similar. Well, here's another example. Here the comparison is between mouse and man. And what you find is that, again, the so-called junk portion, species-specific in terms of mouse, human-specific in terms of humans, but when you look at where they're located, it's the same kind of pattern. It's the same non-random distribution. It's like, to me, this is like something from the movie Contact, you know, where you're expecting all these random background signals coming from space, and then all of a sudden you get this very interesting pattern, and you say, I've looked at it a number of different ways, and all I can tell you is that it means something. It means something.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Anne Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.